Bisban stood, staring at the iron door, stroking his singed beard in dismay. The door was still shut.
"That really should have worked," he said.
"What about the lock?"
Tanis yelled, trying to see through the smoke. The iron bars of the cell door already glowed red-hot.
"It didn't budge,"
Sturm shouted. He tried to approach the cage door to kick it open, but the heat radiating from the bars made it impossible.
"The lock may be hot enough to break."
He choked in the smoke.
"Sestan!"
Tasselhoff's shrill voice rose above the crackling flames.
"Try again! Hurry!"
The gully dwarf staggered to his feet, swung the axe, missed, swung again, and hit the lock. The superheated metal shattered, the lock gave way, and the cage door swung open.
"Tanis, help us!"
Goldmoon cried as she and Riverwind struggled to pull the injured Theros from his smoking pallet.
"Sturm, the others!"
Tanis yelled, then coughed in the smoke. He staggered to the front of the wagon as the rest jumped out, Sturm grabbing hold of Fizban, who was still staring sadly at the door.
"Come on, old one,"
he yelled, his gentle actions belying his harsh words as he took Fizban's arm. Caramon, Raistlin, and Tika caught Fizban as he jumped from the flaming wreckage. Tanis and Riverwind lifted Theros by the shoulders and dragged him out. Goldmoon stumbled after them. She and Sturm jumped from the cart just as the ceiling collapsed.
"Caramon, get our weapons from the supply wagon," Tanis shouted. "Go with him, Sturm. Flint and Tasselhoff, get the packs. Raistlin?"
"I will get my back,"
the mage said, choking in the smoke.
"And my staff. No one else may touch them."
"All right,"
Tanis said, thinking quickly.
"Gilthanas."
"I'm not yours to order around, Tantalus," the elf snapped, and ran off into the woods without looking back.
Before Tanis could answer, Sturm and Caramon ran back. Caramon's knuckles were split and bleeding. There had been two Draconians looting the supply wagon.
"Get moving," Sturm shouted. "More coming. Where's your elf friend?"
he asked Tanis suspiciously.
"He's gone ahead into the woods," Tanis said. "Just remember, he and his people saved us."
"Did they?" Sturm said, his eyes narrow.
"It seems that between the elves and the old man, we came closer to getting killed than with just about anything short of the dragon."
At that moment, six Draconians rushed out from the smoke, skidding to a halt at the sight of the warriors.
"Run for the woods!" Tanis yelled, bending down to help Riverwind lift Theros.
They carried the smith to cover, while Caramon and Sturm stood side by side, covering their retreat. Both noticed immediately that the creatures they faced were unlike the Draconians they had fought before. Their armor and coloring were different, and they carried bows and long swords, the latter dripping with some sort of awful ichor. Both men remembered stories about Draconians that turned to acid, and those whose bones exploded. Caramon charged forward, bellowing like an enraged animal, his sword slashing in an arc. Two Draconians fell before they knew what was attacking. Sturm saluted the other four with his sword and swept off the head of one in the return stroke. He jumped at the others, but they stopped just out of his range, grinning, apparently waiting for something. Sturm and Caramon watched uneasily, wondering what was going on. Then they knew. The bodies of the slain Draconians near them began to melt into the road. The flesh boiled and ran like lard in a skillet. A yellowish vapor formed over them, mixing with the thinning smoke from the smoldering cage. Both men gagged as the yellow vapor rose around them. They grew dizzy and knew they were being poisoned.
"Come on, get back!"
Tanis yelled from the woods. The two stumbled back, fleeing through a rainstorm of arrows, as a force of 40 or 50 Draconians swept around the cage, screeching in anger. The Draconians started after them, then fell back when a clear voice called out,
"Hai, Ulsain!"
And 10 elves, led by Gilthanas, ran from the woods.
"Quintalas Uvenelai!"
Gilthanas shouted. Caramon and Sturm staggered past him, the elves covering their retreat. Then the elves fell back.
"Follow me,"
Gilthanas told the companions, switching to High Common. At a sign from Gilthanas, 4 of the elven warriors picked up Theros and carried him into the woods. Tanis looked back at the cage. The Draconians had come to a halt, eyeing the woods warily.
"Hurry!"
Gilthanas urged.
"My men will cover you!"
Elven voices rose out of the woods, taunting the approaching Draconians, trying to lure them into arrow range. The companions looked at each other hesitantly.
"I do not want to enter Elvenwood," Riverwind said harshly.
"It is all right," Tanis said, putting his hand on Riverwind's arm.
"You have my pledge."
Riverwind stared at him for a moment, then plunged into the woods, the others walking by his side. Last to come were Caramon and Raistlin, helping Fizban. The old man glanced back at the cage, now nothing more than a pile of ashes and twisted iron.
"Wonderful spell. And did anyone say a word of thanks?"
he asked wistfully. The elves led them swiftly through the wilderness. Without their guidance, the party would have been hopelessly lost. Behind them, the sound of battle turned half-hearted.
"The Draconians know better than to follow us into the woods,"
Gilthanas said, smiling grimly. Tanis, seeing armed elven warriors hidden among the leaves of the trees, had little fear of pursuit. Soon, all sounds of fighting were lost. A thick carpeting of dead leaves covered the ground. Bare tree limbs creaked in the chill wind of early morning. After spending days riding cramped in the cage, the companions moved slowly and stiffly, glad for the exercise that warmed their blood. Gilthanas led them into a wide glade as the morning sun lit the woods with a pale light. The glade was crowded with freed prisoners. Tasselhoff glanced eagerly around the group, then shook his head sadly.
"I wonder what happened to Seston," he said to Tanis. "I thought I saw him run off."
"Don't worry," the half-elf patted him on the shoulder. "He'll be all right. The elves have no love for gully dwarves, but they wouldn't kill him." Tasselhoff shook his head. It wasn't the elves he was worried about. Entering the clearing, the companions saw an unusually tall and powerfully built elf speaking to the group of refugees. His voice was cold. His demeanor, serious and stern.
"You are free to go, if any are free to go in this land. We have heard rumors that the lands south of Pax Tharkas are not under the control of the Dragon High Lord. I suggest, therefore, that you head southeast. Move as far and as fast as you can this day. We have food and supplies for your journey, all that we can spare. We can do little else for you."
The refugees from Solace, stunned by their sudden freedom, stared around bleakly and helplessly. They had been farmers on the outskirts of Solace, forced to watch while their homes burned and their crops were stolen to feed the Dragon High Lord's army. Most of them had never been farther from Solace than Haven. Dragons and elves were creatures of legend. Now children's stories had come to haunt them. Goldmoon's clear blue eyes glinted. She knew how they felt.
"How can you be so cruel?" she called out angrily to the tall elf. "Look at these people. They have never been out of Solace in their lives,
and you tell them calmly to walk through a land overrun by enemy forces.
What would you have me do, human?
The elf interrupted her. Lead them south myself? It is enough that we have freed them. My people have their own problems. I cannot be concerned with those of humans. He shifted his eyes to the group of refugees.
I warn you, time is wasting. Be on your way.
Goldmoon turned to Tanis, seeking support. But he just shook his head, his face dark and shadowed. One of the men, giving the elves a haggard glance, stumbled off the trail that meandered south through the wilderness. The other men shouldered crude weapons, women caught up their children, and families straggled off. Goldmoon strode forward to confront the elf.
How can you care so little for...
for humans?
The elf stared at her coldly.
It was humans who brought the cataclysm upon us. They were the ones who sought the gods, demanding in their pride the power that was granted humor in humility. It was humans who caused the gods to turn their faces from us. They haven't, Goldmoon shouted. The gods are among us.
Portheos's eyes flared with anger. He started to turn away when Gilthanas stepped up to his brother and spoke to him swiftly in the elven language.
What do they say?
Riverwind asked Tanis suspiciously.
Gilthanas is telling how Goldmoon healed Theros.
Tanis said slowly. It had been many, many years since he had heard or spoken more than a few words in the elven tongue. He had forgotten how beautiful the language was, so beautiful it seemed to cut his soul and leave him wounded and bleeding inside. He watched Portheos's eyes widen in disbelief. Then Gilthanas pointed at Tanis. Both the brothers turned to face him, their expressive elven features hardening. Riverwind flicked a glance at Tanis, saw the half-elf standing pale but composed under his scrutiny.
You return to the land of your birth, do not?
Riverwind asked. It does not seem you are welcome.
Yes, Tanis said grimly, aware of what the plainsman was thinking. He knew Riverwind was not prying into personal affairs out of curiosity. In many ways, they were in more danger now than they had been with the Fewmaster.
They will take us to Quali Nost,
Tanis said slowly, the words apparently causing him deep pain.
I have not been there for many years. As Flint will tell you, I was not forced out, but few were sorry to see me leave. As you once said to me, Riverwind, to humans I am half-elven, to elves I was half-man.
Then let us leave and travel south with the others.
Riverwind said.
You would never get out of here alive,
Flint murmured. Tanis nodded.
Look around, he said.
Riverwind glanced around him and saw the elven warriors moving like shadows among the trees, their brown clothing blended in with the wilderness that was their home. As the two elves ended their conversation, Portheos turned his gaze from Tanis back to Goldmoon.
I have heard strange tales from my brother that bear investigation. I extend to you, therefore, what the elves have extended to no humans in years. Our hospitality. You will be our honored guests. Please follow me.
Portheos gestured. Nearly 24 elven warriors emerged from the woods, surrounding their companions.
Honored prisoners is more like it. This is going to be rough on you, my lad,
Flint said to Tanis in a low, gentle voice.
I know, old friend.
Tanis rested his hand on the dwarf's shoulder.
I know.
Chapter 5 The Speaker of the Suns.
I have never imagined such beauty existed, Gold Moon said softly.
The day's march had been difficult, but the reward at the end was beyond their dreams. The companions stood on a high cliff over the fabled city of Qualinost. Four slender spires rose from the city's corners like glistening spindles, their brilliant white stone marbled with shining silver. Graceful arches, swooping from spire to spire, soared through the air. Crafted by ancient dwarven metalsmiths, they were strong enough to hold the weight of an army, yet they appeared so delicate that a bird lighting on them might overthrow the balance. These glistening arches were the city's only boundaries. There was no wall around Qualinost. The elven city opened its arms lovingly to the wilderness. The buildings of Qualinost enhanced nature rather than concealing it. The houses and shops were carved from rose-colored quartz. Tall and slender as aspen trees, they vaulted upward in impossible spirals from quartz-lined avenues. In the center stood a great tower of burnished gold, catching the sunlight and throwing it back in whirling, sparkling patterns that gave the tower life. Looking down upon the city, it seemed that peace and beauty, unchanged from ages past, must dwell in Qualinost, if it dwelled anywhere in Kryn.
Rest here, Gilfinas told them, leaving them in a grove of aspen trees. The journey has been long, and for that I apologize. I know you are weary and your hunger, Caramon looked up hopefully. But I must beg your indulgence a few moments longer. Please excuse me.
Gilfinas bowed, then walked to stand by his brother. Sighing, Caramon began rummaging through his pack for the fifth time, hoping perhaps he had overlooked a morsel. Raistlin read his spellbook, his lips repeating the difficult words, trying to grasp their meaning, to find the correct inflection and phrasing that would make his blood burn and so tell him the spell was his at last. The others looked around, marveling at the beauty of the city beneath them, and the aura of ancient tranquility that lay over it. Even Riverwind seemed touched. His face softened, and he held Gold Moon close. For a brief instant, their caress and their sorrows eased, and they found comfort in each other's nearness. Tika sat apart, watching them wistfully. Tasselhoff was trying to map their way from Gateway into Qualinost, although Tanis had told him four times that the way was secret, and the elves would never permit him to carry off a map. The old magician, Fizban, was asleep. Sturm and Flint watched Tanis in concern. Flint, because he alone had any idea of what the half-elf was suffering. Sturm, because he knew what it was like returning to a home that didn't want you. The knight laid his hand on Tanis's arm.
Coming home isn't easy, my friend. Is it?
He asked.
No,
Tanis answered softly.
I thought I had left this behind long ago. But now, I know I never truly left at all. Qualinesti is part of me, no matter how much I want to deny it.
Hush! Gilthinas!
Flint warned. The elf came over to Tanis.
Runners were sent ahead, and now they have returned, he said in Elven. My father has asked to see you, all of you, at once, in the Tower of the Sun. I cannot permit time for refreshment. In this we seem crude and impolite.
Gilthinas, Tanis interrupted in common.
My friends and I have been through unimagined peril. We have traveled roads where, literally, the dead walked. We won't faint from hunger. He glanced at Caraman. Some of us won't, at any rate. The warrior, hearing Tanis, sighed and tightened his belt.
Thank you, Gilthanas said stiffly. I am glad you understand. Now, please follow as swiftly as you can.
The companions gathered their things hastily and woke Fizban. Rising to his feet, he fell over a tree root.
Big lummox,
he snapped, striking it with his staff.
There! Did you see it? Tried to trip me,
he said to Raislin. The mage slipped his precious book back into its pouch.
Yes, old one.
Raistlin smiled, assisting Fizban to his feet. The old magician leaned on the young one's shoulder as they walked after the others. Tanis watched them, wondering. The old magician was obviously a dotard. Yet Tanis remembered Raistlin's look of stark terror when he woke and found Fizban leaning over him. What had the mage seen? What did he know about this old man? Tanis reminded himself to ask. Now, however, he had other more pressing matters on his mind. Walking forward, he caught up with the elf.
Tell me, Gilthanas,
Tanis said in elven, the unfamiliar words haltingly coming back to him.
What's going on?
I have a right to know.
Have you?
Gilthanas asked harshly, glancing at Tanis from the corners of his almond-shaped eyes.
Do you care what happens to elves any more? You can barely speak our language.
Of course I care, Tanis said angrily. You are my people too.
Then why do you flaunt your human heritage?
Gilthanas gestured to Tanis's bearded face. I would think you would be ashamed. He stopped, biting his lip, his face flushing. Tanis nodded grimly.
Yes, I was ashamed, and that's why I left. But if I was ashamed, who made me so?
Forgive me, Tantalas, Gilthanas said, shaking his head.
What I said was cruel, and truly I did not mean it. It's just that if you only understood the danger we face.
Tell me,
Tanis practically shouted in his frustration. I want to understand.
We are leaving Qualinasti,
Gilthanas said. Tanis stopped and stared at the elf.
Leaving Qualinasti?
He repeated, switching to common in his shock. The companions heard him and cast quick glances at each other. The old magician's face darkened as he tugged at his beard.
You can't mean it,
Tanis said softly.
Leaving Qualinasti? Why?
Surely things aren't this bad.
They are worse,
Gilthanas said sadly.
Look around you, Tantalus. You see Qualinost in its final days.
They entered the first streets of the city. Tanis, at first glance, saw everything exactly as he had left it 50 years ago, neither the streets of crushed, gleaming rock, nor the aspen trees they ran among had changed. The clean streets sparkled brightly in the sunshine. The aspens had grown perhaps not. Their leaves glimmered in the late morning light, the gold and silver inlaid branches rustled and sang. The houses along the streets had not changed, decorated with quartz. They shimmered in the sunlight, creating small rainbows of color everywhere the eye looked. All seemed as the elves loved it, beautiful, orderly, unchanging. No, that was wrong, Tanis realized. The song of the trees was now sad and lamenting, not the peaceful, joyful song Tanis remembered. Qualinost had changed, and the change was change itself. He tried to grasp hold of it, to understand it, even as he felt his soul shrivel with loss. The change was not in the buildings, not in the trees, or the sun shining through the leaves. The change was in the air. It crackled with tension, as before a storm. And as Tanis walked the streets of Qualinost, he saw things he had never before seen in his homeland. He saw haste. He saw hurry. He saw indecision. He saw panic, desperation, and despair. Women meeting friends embraced and wept, then parted, and hurried on separate ways. Children sat forlorn, not understanding, knowing only that play was out of place. Men gathered in groups, hands on their swords, keeping watchful eyes on their families. Here and there fires burned as the elves destroyed what they loved and could not carry with them, rather than let the coming darkness consume it. Tanis had grieved over the destruction of solace, but the sight of what was happening in Qualinost entered his soul like the blade of a dull knife. He had not realized it meant so much to him. He had known, deep in his heart, that even if he never returned, Qualinasti would always be there. But no, he was losing even that. Qualinasti would perish. Tanis heard a strange sound and turned around to see the old magician weeping. "What plans have you made? Where will you go? Can you escape?" Tanis asked Gilthanas bleakly.
"You will find out the answers to those questions and more. Too soon. Too soon," Gilthanas murmured.
The Tower of the Sun rose high above the other buildings in Qualinost. Sunlight reflecting off the golden surface gave the illusion of whirling movement. The companions entered the tower in silence, awestruck by the beauty and majesty of the ancient building. Only Raistlin glanced around, unimpressed. To his eyes there existed no beauty, only death. Gilthanas led the companions to a small alcove.
"This room is just off the main chamber," he said. "My father is meeting with the heads of household to plan the evacuation. My brother has gone to tell him of our arrival. When the business is finished, we will be summoned."
At his gesture, the elves entered, bearing pitchers and basins of cool water.
"Please refresh yourselves as time permits."
The companions drank, then washed the dust of the journey from their faces and hands. Sturm removed his cloak and carefully polished his armor as best he could with one of Tasselhoff's handkerchiefs. Gold Moon brushed out her shining hair, kept her cloak fastened around her neck. She and Tanis had decided the medallion she wore should remain hidden until the time seemed proper to reveal it. Some would recognize it. Fizban tried, without much success, to straighten his bent and shapeless hat. Karaman looked around for something to eat. Gilthanas stood apart from them all, his face pale and drawn. Within moments, Portheos appeared in the arched doorway.
"You are cold," he said sternly.
The companions entered the chamber of the Speaker of the Suns. No human had seen the inside of this building for hundreds of years. No Kender had ever seen it. The last dwarves who saw it were the ones present at its construction hundreds of years before.
"Ah, now this is craftsmanship,"
Flint said softly, tears misting his eyes. The chamber was round and seemed immensely larger than the slender tower could possibly encompass. Built entirely of white marble, there were no support beams, no columns. The room soared upwards hundreds of feet to form a dome at the very top of the tower, where a beautiful mosaic made of inlaid, glittering tile portrayed the blue sky and the sun on one half, the silver moon, the red moon, and the stars on the other half. The halves, separated by a rainbow. There were no lights in the chamber. Cunningly built windows and mirrors focused sunlight into the room, no matter where the sun was located in the sky. The streams of sunlight converged in the center of the chamber, illuminating a rostrum. There were no seats in the tower. The elves stood, men and women together. Only those designated as heads of household had the right to be in this meeting. There were more women present than Tanis ever remembered seeing, many dressed in deep purple, the color of mourning. Elves marry for life, and if the spouse dies, do not remarry. Thus, the widow has the status of head of household until her death. The companions were led to the front of the chamber. The elves made room for them in respectful silence, but gave them strange, forbidding looks, particularly the dwarf, the Kender, and the two barbarians who seemed grotesque in their outlandish furs. There were astonished murmurs at the sight of the proud and noble Knight of Solamnia, and there were scattered mutterings over the appearance of Raistlin in his red robes. Elven magic users wore the white robes of good, not the red robes, proclaiming neutrality. That, the elves believed, was just one step removed from black. As the crowd settled down, the Speaker of the Suns came forward to the rostrum. It had been many years since Tanis had seen the Speaker, his adopted father, as it were. And here, too, he saw change. The man was still tall, taller even than his son Portheos. He was dressed in the yellow, shimmering robes of his office. His face was stern and unyielding, his manner austere. He was the Speaker of the Suns, called the Speaker. He had been called the Speaker for well over a century. Those who knew his name never pronounced it, including his children, but Tanis saw in his hair touches of silver, which had not been there before, and there were lines of care and sorrow in the face, which had previously seemed untouched by time. Portheos joined his brother as the companions, led by the elves, entered. The Speaker extended his arms and called them by name. They walked forward into their father's embrace.
"My sons,"
the Speaker said brokenly. And Tanis was startled at this show of emotion.
"I never thought to see either of you in this life again. Tell me of the raid,"
he said, turning to Gilthanas.
"In time, Speaker," said Gilthanas. "First I bid you greet our guests."
"Yes. I'm sorry."
The Speaker passed a trembling hand over his face, and it seemed to Tanis that he aged even as he stood before them.
"Forgive me, guests. I bid you welcome. You, who have entered this kingdom, no one has entered for many years."
Gilthanas spoke a few words, and the Speaker stared shrewdly at Tanis, then beckoned the half-elf forward. His words were cool, his manner polite, if strained.
"Is it indeed you, Tantalus, son of my brother's wife? The years have been long, and all have wondered about your fate. We welcome you back to your homeland, though I fear you come only to see its final days. My daughter in particular will be glad to see you. She has missed her childhood playmate."
Gilthanas stiffened at this, his face darkening, as he looked at Tanis. The half-elf felt his own face flush. He bowed low before the Speaker, unable to say a word.
I welcome the rest of you, and hope to learn more of you later. We shall not keep you long, but it is right that you learn in this room what is happening in the world. Then you will be allowed to rest and refresh yourselves.
Now, my son, the speaker turned to Gilthanas, obviously thankful to end the formalities,
the raid on Pax Tharkas.
Gilthanas stepped forward, his head bowed.
I have failed, Speaker of the Suns.
A murmur passed among the elves, like the wind among the aspens. The speaker's face bore no expression. He simply sighed and stared unseeing out a tall window.
Tell your story,
he said quietly. Gilthanas swallowed, then spoke, his voice so low many in the back of the room leaned forward to hear.
I traveled south with my warriors in secrecy, as was planned. All went well. We found a group of human resistance fighters, refugees from Gateway who joined us, adding to our numbers. Then, by the cruelest mischance, we stumbled into the advance patrols of the Dragon Army. We fought valiantly, elves and humans together, but for naught. I was struck on the head and remember nothing more. When I awoke, I was lying in a ravine surrounded by the bodies of my comrades. Apparently, the foul dragon men shoved the wounded over the cliff, leaving us for dead.
Gilthanas paused, clearing his throat.
Druids in the woods tended my injuries. From them I learned that many of my warriors were still alive and had been taken prisoner. Leaving the druids to bury the dead, I followed the tracks of the dragon army and eventually came to Solace.
Gilthanas stopped. His face glistened with sweat and his hands twitched nervously. He cleared his throat again, tried to speak, and failed. His father watched him with growing concern. Gilthanas spoke.
Solace is destroyed.
There was a gasp from the audience.
The mighty Valenwoods have been cut and burned. Few now stand.
The elves wailed and cried out in dismay and anger. The speaker held up his hand for order.
This is grievous news,
he said sternly.
We mourn the passing of trees old, even to us.
But continue. What of our people?
I found my men tied to stakes in the center of the town square, along with the humans who had helped us,
Gilthanas said, his voice breaking.
They were surrounded by draconian guards. I hoped to be able to free them at night. Then
his voice failed completely, and he bowed his head as his older brother came over and laid a hand on his shoulder. Gilthanas straightened.
A red dragon appeared in the sky.
Sounds of shock and dismay came from the assembled elves. The speaker shook his head in sorrow.
Yes, speaker!
Gilthanas said, and his voice was loud, unnaturally loud and jarring.
It is true. These monsters have returned to Kryn. The red dragon circled above Solace, and all who saw him fled in terror. He flew lower and lower, and then landed in the town square. His great, gleaming, red reptile body filled the clearing. His wings spread destruction, his tail toppled trees. Yellow fangs glistened, green saliva dripped from his massive jaws, his huge talons tore the ground, and riding upon his back was a human male.
Powerfully built, he was dressed in the black robes of a cleric of the Queen of Darkness. A black and gold cape fluttered around him.
His face was hidden by a hideous, horned mask, fashioned in black and gold to resemble the face of a dragon. The dragon men fell to their knees in worship as the dragon landed. The goblins and hobgoblins and foul humans who fight with the dragon men cowered in terror. Many ran away. Only the example of my people gave me the courage to stay.
Now that he was speaking, Gilthanas seemed eager to tell the story.
Some of the humans tied to the stake went into a frenzy of terror, screaming piteously. But my warriors remained calm and defiant, although all were affected alike by the dragon fear the monster generates. The dragon rider did not seem to find this pleasing. He glared at them, and then spoke in a voice that came from the depths of the abyss. His words still burn in my mind. "I am Verminard, Dragon High Lord of the North. I have fought to free this land and these people from the false beliefs spread by those who call themselves Seekers. Many have come to work for me, pleased to further the great cause of the Dragon High Lords. I have shown them mercy and graced them with the blessings my goddess has granted me. Spells of healing I possess, as do no others in this land, and therefore you know that I am the representative of the true gods. But you humans who stand before me now have defied me. You chose to fight me, and therefore your punishment will serve as an example to any others who choose folly over wisdom." Then he turned to the elves and said, "Be it known by this act that I, Verminard, will destroy your race utterly, as decreed by my goddess. Humans can be taught to see the errors of their ways, but elves, never." The man's voice rose until it raged louder than the winds. "Let this be your final warning, all who watch. Ember, destroy." And with that, the great dragon breathed out fire upon all those tied to the stakes. They writhed helplessly, burning to death in terrible agony.
There was no sound at all in the chamber. The shock and horror were too great for words.
"A madness swept over me," Gilthanas continued, his eyes burning feverishly, almost a reflection of what he had seen. "I started to rush forward, to die with my people, when a great hand grasped me and dragged me backward. It was Theros Ironfeld. 'Now is not the time to die, elf,' he told me. 'Now is the time for revenge.' I collapsed then, and he took me back to his house, in peril of his own life. And he would have paid for his kindness to elves with his life, had not this woman healed him."
Gilthanas pointed to Gold Moon, who stood at the back of the group, her face shrouded by her fur cape. The speaker turned to stare at her, as did the other elves in the chamber, their murmurings dark and ominous.
"Therios is the man brought here today, speaker," Portheos said. "The man with but one arm. Our healers say he will live, but they say it is only by a miracle that his life was spared, so dreadful were his wounds."
"Come forward, woman of the plains,"
the speaker commanded sternly. Goldmoon took a step toward the rostrum, Riverwind at her side. Two elven guards moved swiftly to block him. He glared at them, but stood where he was. The chieftain's daughter moved forward, holding her head proudly. As she removed her hood, the sun shone on the silver-gold hair cascading down her back. The elves marveled at her beauty.
"You claim to have healed this man, Theros Ironfeld?"
the speaker asked her with disdain.
"I claim nothing," Gold Moon answered coolly. "Your son saw me heal him. Do you doubt his words?"
"No,"
but he was overwrought, sick and confused. He may have mistaken witchcraft for healing.
Look on this. Goldmoon said gently, and untied her cape, letting it fall away from her neck. The medallion sparkled in the sunlight. The speaker left the rostrum and came forward, his eyes widening in disbelief. Then his face became distorted with rage.
"Blasphemy!" he shouted.
Reaching out, he started to rip the medallion from Gold Moon's throat. There was a flash of blue light. The speaker crumbled to the floor with a cry of pain, as the elves shouted out in alarm, drawing their swords. The companions drew theirs. Elven warriors rushed to surround them.
"Stop this nonsense,"
said the old magician in a strong, stern voice. Fizban tottered up to the rostrum, calmly pushing aside the sword blades as if they were slender branches of an aspen tree. The elves stared in astonishment, seemingly unable to stop him. Muttering to himself, Fizban came up to the speaker, who was lying stunned on the floor. The old man helped the elf to his feet.
"Now then, you asked for that, you know,"
Fizban scolded, brushing the speaker's robes as the elf gaped at him.
"Who are you?"
The speaker gasped.
What was that name?"
The old magician glanced around at Tasselhoff.
"Fizban,"
the Kender said helpfully.
"Yes, Fizban. That's who I am."
The magician stroked his white beard.
"Now, Solostaran, I suggest you call off your guards and tell everyone to settle down. I, for one, would like to hear the story of this young woman's adventures, and you, for one, would do well to listen. It wouldn't hurt you to apologize, either."
As Fizban shook his finger at the speaker, his battered hat tilted forward, covering his eyes.
"Help! I've gone blind!"
Raistlin, with a distrustful glance at the elven guards, hurried forward. He took the old man's arm and straightened his hat.
Oh, thank the true gods,"
the magician said, blinking and shuffling across the floor. The speaker watched the old magician, a puzzled expression on his face. Then, as if in a dream, he turned to face Gold Moon.
"I do apologize, Lady of the Plains,"
he said softly.
"It has been over 300 years since the elven clerics vanished. 300 years since the symbol of Mishikal was seen in this land. My heart bled to see the amulet profaned, as I thought. Forgive me. We have been in despair so long I failed to see the arrival of hope. Please, if you are not weary, tell us your story."
Gold Moon related the story of the medallion, telling of Riverwind and the stoning, the meeting of the companions at the inn, and their journey to Zakh-Tsaroth. She told of the destruction of the dragon and how she received the medallion of Mishikal. But she didn't mention the discs. The sun's rays lengthened as she spoke, changing color as twilight approached. When her story ended, the speaker was silent for long moments.
"I must consider all of this and what it means to us,"
he said finally. He turned to the companions.
"You are exhausted. I see some of you stand by courage alone. Indeed."
He smiled, looking at Fizban, who leaned against a pillar, snoring softly.
"Some of you are asleep on your feet. My daughter, Lorana, will guide you to a place where you can forget your fears. We will hold a banquet in your honor tonight, for you bring us hope. May the peace of the true gods go with you."
The elves parted, and out of their midst came an elf maiden who walked forward to stand beside the speaker. At the sight of her, Caraman's mouth sagged open. Riverwind's eyes widened. Even Raistlin stared, his eyes
seeing beauty at last, for no hint of decay touched the young elf maiden. Her hair was honey pouring from a pitcher. It spilled over her arms and down her back, past her waist, touching her wrists as she stood with her arms at her sides. Her skin was smooth and woodland brown. She had the delicate, refined features of the elves, but these were combined with full, pouting lips and large, liquid eyes that changed color, like leaves in flickering sunshine.
"On my honor as a knight," Sturm said with a catch in his voice, "I've never seen any woman so lovely."
"Nor will you in this world," Tanis murmured. All the companions glanced at Tanis sharply as he spoke, but the half-elf did not notice. His eyes were on the elf maid. Sturm raised his eyebrows, exchanged looks with Caramon, who nudged his brother. Flint shook his head and sighed a sigh that seemed to come from his toes.
"Now much is made clear," Goldmoon said to Riverwind.
"It hasn't been made clear to me," Tasselhoff said. "Do you know what's going on, Tika?"
All Tika knew was that, looking at Lorana, she felt suddenly dumpy and half-dressed, freckled and red-headed. She tugged her blouse up higher over her full bosom, wishing it didn't reveal quite so much, or that she had less to reveal.
"Tell me what's going on,"
Tasselhoff whispered, seeing the knowing looks exchanged by the others.
"I don't know," Tika snapped. "Just that Caramon's making a fool of himself. Look at the big ox. You'd think he'd never seen a woman before."
"She is pretty," Tass said. "Different from you, Tika. She's slender and she walks like a tree, bending in the wind and—" "Oh, shut up,"
Tika snapped furiously, giving Tass a shove that nearly knocked him down. Tasselhoff gave her a wounded glance, then walked over to stand beside Tanis, determined to keep near the half-elf until he figured out what was going on.
"I welcome you to Qualinost, honored guests," Lorana said shyly, in a voice that was like a clear stream rippling among the trees. "Please follow me. The way is not far, and there is food and drink and rest at the end."
Moving with childlike grace, she walked among the companions who parted for her as the elves had done, all of them staring at her admiringly. Lorana lowered her eyes in maidenly modesty and self-consciousness, her cheeks flushing. She looked up only once, and that was as she passed Tanis, a fleeting glance that only Tanis saw. His face grew troubled, his eyes darkened. The companions left the Tower of the Sun, waking Fizban as they departed.
Chapter 6. Tanis and Lorana. Lorana led them to a sun-dappled grove of aspens in the very center of the city. Here, though surrounded by buildings and streets, they seemed to be in the heart of a forest. Only the murmurings of a nearby brook broke the stillness. Lorana, gesturing toward fruit trees among the aspens, told the companions to pick and eat their fill. Elf maids brought in baskets of fresh, fragrant bread. The companions washed in the brook, then returned to relax on soft moss beds to revel in the silent peacefulness around them. All except Tanis. Refusing food, the half-elf wandered around the grove, absorbed in his own thoughts. Tasselhoff watched him closely, eaten alive by curiosity. Lorana was a perfect, charming hostess. She made certain everyone was seated and comfortable, speaking a few words
to each of them.
"Flint Fireforge, isn't it?"
she said. The dwarf flushed with pleasure.
"I still have some of the wonderful toys you made me. We have missed you these many years."
So flustered he couldn't talk, Flint plopped down on the grass and gulped down a huge mug of water.
"You are Tika?"
Lorana asked, stopping by the barmaid.
"Tika Whalen," the girl said huskily. "Tika, what a pretty name, and what beautiful hair you have," Lorana said, reaching out to touch the bouncy red curls admiringly.
"Do you think so?"
Tika said, blushing, seeing Karaman's eyes on her.
"Of course. It is the color of flame. You must have a spirit to match. I heard how you saved my brother's life in the inn, Tika. I am deeply indebted to you."
"Thank you,"
Tika answered softly. "Your hair is real pretty, too."
Lorana smiled and moved on. Tasselhoff noticed, however, that her eyes constantly strayed to Tanis. When the half-elf suddenly threw down an apple and disappeared into the trees, Lorana excused herself hurriedly and followed.
"Ah, now I'll find out what's going on," Tass said to himself.
Glancing around, he slipped after Tanis. Tass crept along the winding trail among the trees and suddenly came upon the half-elf standing beside the foaming stream alone, tossing dead leaves into the water. Seeing movement to his left, Tass quickly crouched down into a clump of bushes as Lorana emerged from another trail.
"Tantalas, quisif nan pa," she called.
As Tanis turned at the sound of his elven name, she flung her arms around his neck, kissing him.
"Ugh," she said teasingly, pulling back. "Shave off that horrible beard. It itches. And you don't look like Tantalus anymore."
Tanis put his hands to her waist and gently pushed her away.
"Lorana," he began. "No, don't be mad about the beard. I'll learn to like it if you insist,"
Lorana pleaded,
pouting. "Kiss me back. No? Then I'll kiss you until you cannot help yourself."
She kissed him again until finally Tanis broke free of her grip.
"Stop it, Lorana,"
he said harshly, turning away.
"Why? What's the matter?" she asked, catching hold of his hand. "You've been gone so many years, and now you're back. Don't be cold and gloomy. You are my betrothed, remember? It is proper for a girl to kiss her betrothed."
"That was a long time ago," Tanis said. "We were children then, playing a game. Nothing more. It was romantic, a secret to share. You know what would have happened if your father had found out. Gilthanas did find out, didn't he?"
"Of course. I told him,"
Lorana said, hanging her head, looking up at Tanis through her long eyelashes.
"I tell Gilthanas everything, you know that. I didn't think he'd react like that. I know what he said to you. He told me later. He felt badly."
"I'll bet he did."
Tanis gripped her wrists, holding her hands still.
"What he said was true, Lorana. I am a bastard half-breed. Your father would have every right to kill me. How could I bring disgrace down on him after what he did for my mother and me? That was one reason I left. That, and to find out who I am and where I belong."
"You are Tantalus, my beloved, and you belong here,"
Lorana cried. She broke free of his grip and caught his hands in her own.
"Look, you wear my ring still. I know why you left. It was because you were afraid to love me, but you don't need to be, not anymore. Everything's changed.
Father has so much to worry about, he won't mind. Besides, you're a hero now. Please let us be married. Isn't that why you came back?
Lorana, Tanis spoke gently but firmly. My returning was an accident.
No!
She cried, pushing him away. I don't believe you. You must have heard Gilthanas's story. If Portheous had not rescued us, we would have been in Pax Tharkas now.
He made it up. He didn't want to tell me the truth. You came back because you loved me. I won't listen to anything else.
I didn't want to tell you, but I see that I must. Tanis said, exasperated. Lorana, I'm in love with someone else, a human woman. Her name is Kitiara. That doesn't mean I don't love you, too. I do...
Tanis faltered. Lorana stared at him, all color drained from her face.
I do love you, Lorana. But you see, I can't marry you because I love her, too. My heart is divided, just like my blood.
He took off the ring of golden ivy leaves and handed it to her.
I release you from any promises you made to me, Lorana, and I ask you to release me.
Lorana took the ring, unable to speak. She looked at Tanis pleadingly, then, seeing only pity on his face, shrieked and flung the ring away from her. It fell at Tass's feet. He picked it up and slipped it into a pouch.
Lorana,
Tanis said sorrowfully, taking her in his arms as she sobbed wildly.
I'm so sorry. I never meant...
At this point, Tasselhoff slipped out of the brush and made his way back up the trail.
Well,
said the Kender to himself, sighing in satisfaction.
Now at least I know what's going on.
Tanis woke suddenly to find Gilthanas standing over him.
Lorana,
he asked, getting to his feet.
She is all right,
Gilthanas said quietly.
Her maidens brought her home. She told me what you said. I just want you to know I understand. It was what I feared all along. The human half of you cries to other humans. I tried to tell her, hoping she wouldn't get hurt. She will listen to me now. Thank you, Tantalus. I know it cannot have been easy. It wasn't,
Tanis said, swallowing.
I'm going to be honest, Gilthanas. I love her, I really do. It's just that, please, say no more. Let us leave it as it is, and perhaps if we cannot be friends, we can at least respect each other.
Gilthanas's face was drawn and pale in the setting sun.
You and your friends must prepare yourselves. When the silver moon rises, there will be a feast, and then the High Council meeting. Now is the time when decisions must be made.
He left. Tanis stared after him a moment, then, sighing, went to wake the others.
Chapter 7 Farewell. The Companion's Decision. The feast, held in Quale Nost, reminded Goldmoon of her mother's funeral banquet. Like the feast, the funeral was supposed to be a joyous occasion. After all, Tirsong had become a goddess. But the people found it difficult to accept the death of this beautiful woman, and so the Kuei Xiu mourned her passing with a grief that approached blasphemy. Tirsong's funeral banquet was the most elaborate to be given in the memory of the Kuei Xiu. Her grieving husband had spared no expense. Like the banquet in Quale Nost, on this night, there was a great deal of food which few could eat. There were half-hearted attempts at conversation when no one wanted to talk. Occasionally, someone, overcome with sorrow, was forced to leave the table. So vivid was this memory that Gold Moon could eat little. The food was ash in her mouth.
Riverwind regarded her with concern. His hand found hers beneath the table, and she gripped it hard, smiling as his strength flowed into her body. The elven feast was held in the courtyard just south of the great golden tower. There were no walls about the platform of the crystal and marble which sat atop the highest hill in Qualinost, offering an unobstructed view of the glittering city below, the dark forest beyond, and even the deep purple edge of the Tharkadan Mountains far to the south. But the beauty was lost on those in attendance, or made more poignant by the knowledge that soon it would be gone forever. Gold Moon sat at the right hand of the speaker. He tried to make polite conversation, but eventually his worries and concerns overwhelmed him, and he fell silent. To the speaker's left sat his daughter, Lorana. She made no pretense at eating, just sat with her head bowed, her long hair flowing around her face. When she did look up, it was to gaze at Tanis, her heart in her eyes. The half-elf, very much aware of the heartbroken stare as well as of Gilfinas eyeing him coldly, ate his food without appetite, his eyes fixed on his plate. Sturm, next to him, was drawing up in his mind plans for the defense of Qualinesti. Flint felt strange and out of place, as dwarves always feel among elves. He didn't like elven food anyway.